All right, Barker, you ready?
Nope.
I got it. Oop.
You take it.
I got it. Clunk. Not a great day in the field yesterday for the Blue Jays. 6-3 losers to the Houston Astros. The Astros taking 2 of 3 games in that series. And a lot of folks on social media afterwards, Kevin, talking about a couple of misplays in the outfield, misadventures in the outfield involving Randall Grichuk, one in particular, on a fly ball or a pop-up by Taylor Jones of the Astros.
Astros.
Thank you. I'll spit it out.
You're welcome.
Monday. Give me a chance.
Don't let it beat you.
Give me a chance
let
now.
You know,
I'm still that collision there. You know, backing up. I got it. I still got to worry about the collision. Lots of talk about, how it looked on TV. I know that Jamie and Joe addressed it. There were some words exchanged clearly between Marcus and Randall Grichuk. It was not a great inning in the field for Randall Grichuk to by any stretch of the imagination. My first reaction to this is the same thing as a lot of Blue Jays fans. I thought back to 2015 and that game at Yankee Stadium where Troy Tulowitzki and Kevin Pillar had a collision, and Tulo ended up breaking or cracking or fracturing a bone in his shoulder, and wasn't really quite the same from that point on. And I saw Teoscar Hernandez kind of over there as well, getting involved in it. And people may not know this, but Teoscar Hernandez himself came very close to suffering a serious knee injury in a collision with Jose Altuve. And boy, you want to talk about... That was back when he was a young player and Altuve was really in his prime. And you want to talk about what could have been a costly accident or a costly collision for the Astros. It was, you still watch it and you understand why Teoscar has said at the time of the collision, he thought he just ripped his knee up. And he was convinced that his season was over because of it. So it happens. But, Bark, what did you make of the reaction? Do you read anything into it? Because that was... we talked about it off air, right? We've seen guys have collisions, and, the reaction to it is usually a big dummy. I had the damn ball, and you slap the guy in the side of the head and get your ass back in center field. You got no need to be over here. It wasn't quite like that, was it?
No, Randall and Marcus Semien don't like each other. No friends act like they acted. It may have started because Randall, for whatever reason, couldn't see the baseball. One of them they let fall in. The runner got on one of them that Marcus Semien was backpedaling it, and it looked like Randall couldn't really see the ball right behind second base, and he ran in and called him off at the last second. And Marcus Semien looked like he didn't seem to like that too much. The play that they ran into each other, Marcus Semien was backpedaling. It's the job of the outfielder to run in. When you see the guy backpedaling and call the guy off, it just seemed like Marcus was very loud. You could actually see him with his mouth wide open yelling and screaming, I got it. For whatever reason, the communication factor wasn't there. But they don't like each other.
Just a minute here, Bark. Not just a minute. Okay, listen. Heat of the action, all that sort of stuff. I mean, look, you've seen teammates fight. We talk about that fight in the tunnel when John Gibbons was manager. You've seen managers and players fight.
Yeah.
We've all heard about teammates fighting, but come on, you can't sit here and.
So you're telling me 26 guys in a room for a 162 game season and they don't have a home stadium and all the things that are going on with the Toronto Blue Jays and Randall's playing center and playing right and hitting fifth and hitting sixth and that really doesn't have a set role and have to fight for playing time every single guy in that room has to be buddy-buddy with each other and go to dinner and hold each other's hands. No, that's not the way it works.
No.
I've been in 1,000 clubhouses. There's like two guys that you like and you hang out with all year that you'll go to the batting cage with, you'll go to dinner with, you'll hang out on the bus with when you're going to and from the field. That's just the way it is. Look to me like, now I don't know this for sure, but buddies don't act like that. But buddies don't go, oh, walking away, you saying something, he's saying something, then the right fielder, Teoscar Hernandez, has to hold basically Marcus Semien. I don't want to say he held him back, but he held him enough to say, okay, that's enough. Like, let's move on here. We're facing a pretty good team who's been kicking our butts all over the place. The guy in center field obviously is having a bad day defensively. He's got a little chippiness to him, and maybe you two don't like each other. You go your way, he'll go his way. And it's just funny that for what I could see, after the inning was over, I saw Teoscar and Marcus Semien hanging out together, and Marcus Semien was making that little, oh, he ran into me and he fell over, look how strong I am. And did you see Randall anywhere around? Nope. Now, he could have been – I don't really remember where he was hitting in the order. He could have been up and ready to hit. But the point being is you didn't see any over there going, hey, I'm sorry, apologize, won't happen again. I couldn't hear you calling it off. We'll live to fight another day kind of thing. Again, it gets back to that. It's okay if a guy don't like you. You know what that means? That just means that guy wants to outdo you, and that will make your team better, because when he sees Marcus getting a bunch of hits, now Randall wants to come up and get a bunch of hits and get some key hits and drive in some big runs and play defense like crazy. That'll just add a little bit more element to it. And look, that's what I saw from it, because I've been in locker rooms and I've been around enough teammates to know that this is the way it usually works, that you just don't like everybody. And from what I saw, it just doesn't look like there's a whole lot of love lost between those two guys.
Wow. I mean, I bow to the fact that you've been in locker rooms, and I've said the same thing. I mean, I know for a fact I've covered a lot of teams where guys didn't like each other at all. And here's the thing. Look, you put 26 people in the same room, and I'm willing to bet even before you factor in that you're living together and you're traveling together and you see each other all the time, you're automatically going to have a couple of people that aren't going to get along. You know, like we talked about this off air, and I said, I mean, I didn't think anything of it other than I thought it was, you know, a heat of the moment thing. Two guys getting pissed off.
Whenever you have to have a teammate standing between one of you two, Teoscar obviously heard something that threw his ears in the air that basically said, uh-oh, this could get a little hairy. I need to step in here and at least get one guy going one direction, another guy going the other direction. I don't see the huge deal in that. Nothing happened on the field. It's not an embarrassment. This is what I saw. Now, they could show up today and be buddy-buddy and be hugging it out on the field. But what I saw yesterday, it's okay if you go your way, I go my way, and you continue to go that way, and I'll continue to go this way. We probably won't meet in the middle. It's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of being a baseball player. It could have been a rough day for each guy. One guy woke up on the wrong side of the bed. One guy wasn't playing good defense, and this is how it sort of turned out. By the way, they were playing a really good team who was beating them up all over the yard, right? The Astros were playing defense like nobody else. That they were getting big hits when they were supposed to. That lineup is relentless. You can say what you want about the banging of the trash can, but you throw them a fastball somewhere in the strike zone, one through about seven in that order is barreling that thing up somewhere line to line. They're hitting that ball super hard. And that just doesn't come around every day. So it's accumulation, I think, of a bunch of things that the Blue Jays weren't doing right. And it turned out to they lost two out of three, and now they got to go and play a pretty halfway decent team in the AL Central and hopefully turn this thing around and start having some better at-bats. And, you know, it starts with one guy for me is Bo Bichette. I don't know what you saw over the last 3 days, but I saw a guy that's not too hard to pitch to, and I saw a team in the Astros who weren't afraid to throw him fastball. Second game against Urquidy. He had four at-bats in that game, Jeff. He saw one breaking ball. One. That for me is an organization or teams now. The word is with the big giant leg kick and the very aggressive everywhere in the strike zone, you don't have to throw a good pitch to get him out. You can make it look like a strike. You can elevate it. Right, he doesn't like the ball up and away with the fastball. He doesn't like the ball down and away with the fastball. That would tell you that with that backside falling across the plate, which is I've been trying to point out that, you know, he needs to hone that in a little bit. He's not going to eliminate the leg kick. That's nonsense to talk about. But he can have a little bit of better direction, a little bit better finish through his pitches, and maybe that'll allow him to lay off of one of the two. But you saw the Astros. Here it is, big fella. See if you can hit it. We don't think you can. That's why we keep throwing it to you.
The Jays are 30-27 overall. They have today off, as you heard Mr. Barker say. They go on to the South Side to take the take on the Chicago White Sox. Love the White Sox South Side uniforms, by the way, that they rolled out this weekend.
Yeah.
Steven Matz started the game, 8 hits, 4 runs over 4 1/3 innings, pair of solo home runs. Just the second time in 12 starts this year he didn't complete 5 innings. Luis Garcia was awfully good for the Astros. And we want to talk about the Astros in a minute and then say goodbye to them. 3 hits and 1 run over 6 innings. 2 walks, 8 Ks. And I thought about this afterwards, and I talked about it in the Blue Jays talk with Wong and Goldberg following the game. You know, you look at the Astros. We talk about the Astros lineup an awful lot. And rightly so. It's a terrific lineup. It's one of the best lineups in the game. And I think, you know, I think they're never going to get their due as a result of that cheating scandal. They just aren't. The die's been cast. It is what it is. These guys can flat out hit. But Bark, I watched that game yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, there's a lot of similarities between the Astros and the Jays in terms of building around good young players. You look at the players the Astros signed or developed. Now that's how they've built their team. But then I looked at the Astros pitching. And so I did very quick math. This is probably not completely accurate, but it's only out by one or two. Going into yesterday's game, the Astros had about 250 pitching appearances. That's relievers, starters throughout the year. 104 of those were by homegrown guys like Luis Garcia. The Jays had 77 of roughly the same amount by homegrown guys. And all I'm saying by that is, you know, you look at the guys that the Astros ran out in the playoffs last year. A lot of them were hard throwers from within their own organization. You look at the guys they have this year. Keep in mind, this team does not have Justin Verlander. They're what? They're 7 games over 500 without Justin Verlander. Lance McCullers Jr. is hurt right now. They're getting it done with guys like Urquidy. Oh, by the way, Framber Valdez is just coming back. This is what separates the Astros from the Jays for me, Kevin, is that we're still waiting for Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
We hope Alek Manoah is here to stay. The Astros have 4 guys that are here to stay, one of them being Luis Garcia, guys they've signed and developed. And that is absolutely, I understand, you look at the Chicago Cubs and you say the Chicago Cubs built a World Series winner on the basis of young homegrown players, and then boom, you go into the free agent market, you add a bunch of pitchers, you spend your money on pitchers in 2 or 3 year contracts, lower risk, let somebody else ride the development curve with the pitchers, et cetera, I get all that, but man, oh man, it doesn't hurt, does it? When you have a smaller mid-sized market team like Houston, man, it does not hurt to have that young controllable pitching, and that to me is why, Carlos Correa is a free agent. Some of these guys are getting older. I don't think the Houston Astros are going away anytime soon. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, we talk about bookends in the lineup for the Toronto Blue Jays, and you look at the bookends for the Houston Astros. For me, it starts with Zach Greinke, him going out and doing what he does and sort of being the first guy, right, to set the first end of those books. And then the next guy for me is Martin Maldonado. You notice how he calls the game and how he eliminates the running game and how he can take that pressure off of the pitcher and how demonstrative he is whenever he puts the finger down and he gives that you know, let's go right here, and then how far he sets up off the plate to get a young pitcher through a pretty tough lineup, right? I heard Buck and Tabby talk about it. Why is he setting up so far off the plate? Because they're facing a young lineup who's aggressive, who's trying to carry their team, and the experienced catcher behind the plate knows it. So if he can get ahead and steal strikes by setting up off the plate, even if they don't swing at it, that sets up the next pitch, and that helps his pitcher out. Things that they do when it comes to putting the fingers down and confidence-wise, when he puts the finger down and that pitcher doesn't have to think about it. And, oh, by the way, if they need to go off the tracks a little bit and think differently when it goes to game planning and that kind of thing, it's almost like, I got it. Don't worry about it. I know what we talked about before the game started, but I'm seeing what this guy's swinging at, sort of like Bo Bichette's doing, right? They had a game plan against him. Well, it was probably the same thing that I've noticed. He doesn't right now like the fastball up. He doesn't like the breaking stuff down and away. Okay, if he's not getting to the fastball up, why throw the stuff that breaks down and away? So it's those little tiny adjustments in a game that can make you better and give your team a better chance to win. And, oh, by the way, their bullpen is sort of like the Blue Jays. It's not a great bullpen, but how you hide that is you have a really good catcher who knows what he's doing back there, and you have starting pitchers who can throw strike one and be efficient and, you know, pound the strike zone and get key guys out in lineups so they can be that much more efficient against the lesser of the at-bats in the lineup. They're a really good team. They play great defense. They run the bases. They get really big hits, and they are relentless. 1 through 5 in their order, you could argue, is the best 1 through 5 in baseball.
Yeah, listen, I think Alvarez is a guy that a lot of people have slept on. I'm not putting him in the Acuna Jr., Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Yeah. discussion yet, but he's awfully good, Bart.
You know who the guy that I saw is Carlos Correa. They talk about, because you just don't want to talk about him, because the banging the trash cans, and the one guy that was always raising his hand was Carlos. And everybody hates that guy. They don't like looking at his voice, and he was getting booed and all these things. But I'd argue, if they had to have one hit, the Astros, in their lineup, it wouldn't be that guy. Just you could see the difference in his at-bats and the way he hunts heater and the way he can eliminate his lower half and the way he can hit velocity and the way he can lay off a breaking ball and the way he can go line to line and the way he wants to be in those spots. Look, they're tough to root for, but, man, when you actually sit down and watch how they attack each at-bat, it's must. If for a guy like me that really tries to pick apart every single at-bat, they are must-watch.
I'll tell you what, you can have Carlos Correa, my friend. I really like Yuli Gurriel. Man on base. You know, we talked about a run producer, Bark. I think he's your run producer. I think he fits exactly into that particular category.
Thanks, right center and can pull velocity.
And nice. Interesting you mentioned Carlos Correa, because as Buck pointed out on the telecast, something that the Houston guys talked about as well last week in one of their games. Carlos Correa has kind of shelved the leg kick a little bit. Now, I don't know. His wasn't always as pronounced as Bo's, but it has been. And if you noticed in this series, he was a little more quiet. There was a little more, you know, he left his front leg on the ground a little more than we'd seen in the past, and made good contact as a result of that. 590-590 is the text line. It is Baseball Central. Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker. The Jays are off today. They will be in Chicago tomorrow to take on the White Sox. Got a lot to talk about as a result of that series against the Astros. A little bit of a George Springer update. Got to talk about the pitching, Danny Jansen as well. All of that ahead. Again, 590-590. We'll go to the text line when we come back. It's Baseball Central for a Monday. It is stinking hot, just the way we love it. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Talk about Rowdy Tellez, shall we?
Huh.
Barker, stop laughing. Bob Ritchie, who contributes to Jays from the Couch, name I love. He's previously a contributor to Jays Journal. After I pointed out in social media that one of the things we'd be talking about was one at bat that I think in particular shows how lost Rowdy is. He points out that he thinks Rowdy had a fine bounce back in May. Some of his numbers were better in May. Bark, we got to look at that. We got to look at that at bat yesterday in the, what was it, the third inning? Sorry, fourth inning. Panics on second. Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s walked. Tellez strikes out swinging. And, I mean, he takes two pitches, two good fastballs that are right in when he's on two fastballs that he normally drives, and then just goes after an awful breaking ball. He just looks lost to me. And I know that's not a news flash to anybody who's watched him play.
Yeah.
But maybe a steadier diet of Salem Field will help him, because we know that he's hit well there. But he's just a different looking guy at the plate, Bark, than I remember last year, and I've seen it almost all year long. I just don't get the sense he's comfortable. I don't get the sense a lot of time he's actually seeing the ball, which would concern me.
Yeah, I would say all of those things, and also he's seeing George Springer running the bases and knows that it won't be too long before he comes back, and he'll probably be the odd guy out. And whenever you see those things, you see the writing on the wall. You know that you have to go up and hit more home runs. He's not here to hit a bloop single to left field. He's not here to do that. He's here to hit a home run from left center to the right field line and do it with two guys on. And when you take two heaters down the middle and swing it a back foot slider, and that's a non-competitive bat, you see Charlie over there basically writing down going, there's one more non-competitive at bat, and you're only allowed so many. Rowdy's not an everyday player. They're trying to turn him in sort of to that because they want his left-handed bat in the lineup. They want that presence. They want that little bit of a fear factor that if you do hang a breaking ball, he can hit it to the moon. But right now, pitchers are not afraid to throw him fastballs and fastball counts, and they don't have to do so much pick at it to throw him one, and until he goes up and gets the foot down in an athletic position and drives down and through the baseball and is hunting the heater. Now, is he guessing? Maybe he might be guessing because right now he doesn't know how to hit the heater. That could be one of those things. But for me, until those at bats get better, you're going to see more valleys than you are peaks, and that just means sooner than later you'll see him in the minor leagues.
Yeah, look, I you're right. Once George Springer gets here, and as I have learned and as I have said, and I'm sticking to this, I'll believe George Springer is here for good when I see him play three or four games in a row.
Yep.
I heard the reports this weekend that he had his best day running yet and was doing all that stuff. That's great. And it sounds very much as if he's going to go out into AAA rehab. That's fine. That's wonderful. I'm going to need to see him play three or four games before I'm ready to say that he's back entirely. But the simple fact of the matter is, he's going to be back. Cavan Biggio, we're led to believe, will be back soon. And we can sit here and debate Cavan Biggio as a hitter. I think we all realize that, if you ask me who gives this lineup more value right now, Teoscar, Rowdy Tellez or Cavan Biggio, forget what position they play. I'd rather have Cavan Biggio down in the bottom of the order, at least drawing walks and getting on base and turning it over. But I'm with you. I don't think there's any spot for Rowdy on this team. And I'll ask you this point blank, because I know there are people that are saying, okay, Jeff, well, put that left-handed bat on the bench. He gives you some thump off the bench. Let me ask you this. You need a hit late in the game. You need a lefty hitter. You're going to call in Rowdy? You're going to call in Joe Panik?
What do you have to do when you're sitting on the bench and you come in the seventh inning, Jeff?
Hit a heater.
Now, well, you know what he's hitting on the fastball? 210. He's got 14 strikeouts against the fastball. He's got 13 hits, 10 singles, and 2 doubles, and a home run off the fastball. It's not good enough for a guy that's supposed to annihilate fastballs and be, you know, okay on something spinning, right? It's not like he's not getting good pitches to hit. They're coming right after him. They're not picking at him. They're not afraid to pitch to him because they don't think he can barrel the baseballs. You know, is he chasing too much? I don't think he's chasing too much. I think when he does chase, for whatever reason, he's barreling those balls up, and when he barrels it up, he's not hitting them very hard. He needs to get a ball because he has that little natural uppercut, and he's a straight up and down guy. You're straight up and down guy, and you're trying to gain ground with your front foot. That's a lot of ground to make up. That means your barrel a lot of the times is going to dip below your hands, which means you want the ball down. If you're talking to Rowdy Tellez, you walk up to him and go, until two strikes, man, look for something that's down, right down the middle. It could be spinning, it could be fastball. Look center cut and down until you get to two strikes, and then you do whatever you have to do with two strikes. He's got a little stride separation occasionally when he's red hot. He'll choke up occasionally. He gets the mindset of he's trying to go to left field. But it's put up or shut up time for Rowdy Tellez is basically what I'm trying to tell everybody. And I think he knows that. He's seeing it. Players are not stupid. They see George Springer out there trying to run around second base and stop, and Rowdy's going, uh-oh, now I got to get 4 hits and 2 at-bats today. He's human.
And let's be clear, the defense wasn't great yesterday. Luis Garcia was really good. Steven Matz has had better days. I have no idea. I have no idea the pitch to Jose Altuve, that 1-2 pitch that Altuve hit out home run. I mean, I have no idea why they tried to go inside, but, I mean, that's another.
Tip your hat to the hitter. That's Jeff, that's 97 on the black with two strikes.
Yeah, but my point, what I was trying to say is a lot happened in that game, but Rowdy Tellez came up with two opportunities, right? He came up after Gurriel Jr. had hit the sacrifice fly, right, and grounds out. He comes up with panic on second, Gurriel Jr. in first after a walk, and strikes out. Those are big at-bats in a game. Those are literally at-bats where the game is in the balance. And, again, I just, Joe and Hamilton on the text line, 590-590. I'm just going to read this text, Barker, and I want you to react to it. This is Joe from Hamilton. The problem with Rowdy is who we compare him to. He looked good against Vladdy last year, similar body type and position, and this year he can't compare to him. I think there's something there in that the stuff that makes Rowdy Tellez valuable to this team is no longer pressing. We've talked about it a lot. We don't even think about playing defense for Vladdy Jr. in the ninth inning.
Not a chance in hell you're going to do that.
Vladdy Jr. should be this team's first baseman for the next 20 years. He really should. There is no point having that discussion. So if Rowdy doesn't give me that polish around first base that I was a little concerned I may not get with Vladdy, what does he give me? He doesn't give me much. He really doesn't. And as I said, I'll take in late in the game, if I want somebody to make contact or even draw a base, I'll send Joe Panic up there.
There you go.
Or I'll send, when he's back, if he's not playing every day, I'll send Kevin Biggio up there because he could draw a base on balls. There's no place for Rowdy here.
I don't think as highly of Kevin Biggio as everybody else does when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. I think he has a giant hole in his swing, and it's not really real hard to get him out with that hole. But listen, if he levels out his swing maybe and starts hitting a couple of those to left center field, maybe you could send him up there. The walk thing now, I think, because of how good their lineup is up front, is a little overrated. Now the bottom of the order, you know, especially if you're not hitting ninth, you need to at least go up and start driving balls. Maybe you can get an extra base hit, that kind of thing. I think Rowdy Tellez has just forgotten who he is. There's a couple of things that I used to try and do whenever I was pinch hitting and I wasn't playing every day. At least I wanted to look the part. I would walk up to the plate and at least look like I had a chance of getting a hit. Does Rowdy look like he's got a chance?
No.
Then that's one of the things. Optics is a very important thing, especially when a manager's looking at you going, do I really want, when everybody's back and everybody's healthy, is this the guy that I can call on to do whatever I want him to go up and do? The answer right now would be no.
Kyle in Norfolk has a question, and this is, I think, is something we talk about, but I want to go back and revisit it. Can we discuss the Jays' inability to develop their own frontline starters? I've seen no one drafted, developed, and remain dominant since Roy Halladay. That's actually not really true. Marcus Stroman's still pitching pretty well. Is this an issue with drafting or coaching in the minor leagues? Look, Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, I think we could say, look, there's Aaron Sanchez is injury prone. That's been proven. But, you know, when you talk about drafting and developing a pitcher, he was drafted and developed by the Blue Jays. Once you get up to the majors, you know, that's where at that point you're in the hands of the major league staff. Same with Marcus Stroman. You know, yes, Marcus Stroman was traded. Marcus Stroman was developed and drafted by this organization and is a pretty good starting pitcher right now. So it's not fair to say that they haven't had anybody. I mean, there hasn't been another Roy Halladay. No, hasn't been. But, Bark, I want to say, you look at this organization historically. When they had Halladay, Carpenter, Kelvin Escobar, those were three pretty, really good homegrown pitchers. Since then, the pitchers that they've developed, there have been a lot of Sean Markham guys,
right? Yep. Guys who've had major league careers, but guys who certainly haven't been dominant. And the reason I read out this, this text is it kind of gets to what I said. This is what the Astros do so well, and it just kind of reinforces in my mind that we could sit here and say this team's on the verge of the playoffs, yada yada, et cetera, et cetera. I think go time for this team is when Nate Pearson's here and ready to contribute. And
okay, what if Nate Pearson's not ready to do that? What if Nate Pearson doesn't have a windup, can't throw strike one, can't maintain velocity, doesn't develop a secondary pitch that he can steal a strike with, put somebody away with? What if Alek Manoah doesn't have the velocity that we thought he had? The slider is meh, and his changeup, he throws it too hard. What if those two things don't develop? Can they offensively? Because offensively, the first four guys in their lineup are pretty good if they got George Springer in it for the next 5 years. You can compete in the American League with those four guys.
I'm going to say this. If one of Alek Manoah and or Nate Pearson aren't good major league pitchers, then that is a colossal failure by this organization. If they can't strike with one of those guys, that is a huge indictment of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah.
That's where I am in this. And, you know, and I'm the guy saying that I don't want Nate Pearson up here again until he's ready to stay up here. You know, like we still get daily reports, and that's fine on social media. I don't care what he does over 3 1/3 innings. I don't care how many strikes he's throwing or how many walks. I don't care. You know what? Get back to me when Nate Pearson pitches 6 2/3 or 7 innings against somebody. Get back to me then. Until then, I don't care what he does. I really don't, because if we go along with the idea that he's not going to help this team out of the bullpen, and that's fine. That's a philosophical thing. Fine. Then I don't care what he does until he's up here and ready to stay. I just don't. And I said at the start of the year, and I maintain, that if you're a smart Blue Jays fan, you look at Nate Pearson, and you say, you know, whatever he gives us is a bonus. But you can't count on him right now.
I just think offensively, fans may sell this team a little short, because offensively they're a really good team. If they play halfway decent defense and their bullpen doesn't fall off a cliff, the rotation that they have right now is decent. It's not great. You know, Ryu, for whatever reason, doesn't have command of something in the last couple of starts. Is that an issue? Is that age? The velocity is a tick down on some of the main pitches that he has. Location, because maybe he's aiming pitches now. Is that a big deal? Those are in season things that these clubs have to go through. But lineup wise, if they're healthy and they can get George Springer back, they can hide the issues that all of the fans are worried about. Right? That they can win the games that are 10-6. They can compete against the Astros offensively. Now, maybe not rotation wise.
Can't win a lot. I don't think you can. I don't think you can win. Well, I don't think you can win a World Series winning every game 10-6.
Of course not. Of course not. That's when really good starting pitching is going to show up. Great defense, timely hitting, running the bases the way you're supposed to be run the bases, not giving the other team extra outs. All of these things have to come into play. But being relevant in September, the Blue Jays right now can do that.
590-590 is the text line. Clifton and Etobicoke, you got a question about catching. Aaron and Guelph, you got a question about catching. We're going to address those questions with Kevin Barker, and we're going to ask you, we're going to pick through a little bit in the last segment, some of the pitching we saw this weekend, because I don't know if I was ready to see Ryu, Stripling, and Mats go against the Astros and come away from that thinking, thank God for Ross Stripling, but that was the position that I found myself in. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, Richard Deitz joins me for Writer's Block in a few minutes, and we'll take amongst other things, obviously, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs. Also talk about the fact that the Canadian government has given a waiver
that will allow NHL teams to cross the border for the next round of the playoffs. And, of course, a lot of people are saying, if they're doing it for hockey, why aren't they doing it for baseball? Well, it's not quite the same thing. It's there are a whole bunch of elements to that decision that we'll talk about on Writer's Block. So here we go. Kevin Barker, as I mentioned, a couple of people, including our friend Clifton in Etobicoke. Well, Clifton, is your comment about the Jays catching situation. He wants to know if you're suggesting they need a Russell Martin type of catcher. Aaron and Guelph also brought up Russell Martin's name. Russell Martin is not playing, by the way, as far as I can tell. He's retired and enjoying fatherhood. But let's talk about the catching situation. Danny Jansen strained his hamstring yesterday. I don't, you know, that base running play, it was a misplay on his part, Kevin. It was one of those things that I think instinctively you could see why it happened, but you don't like to see it happen. I mean, I think instinctively in Danny's case, he just didn't think, I got to get the third base. Okay. You should, when the ball goes by you, I understand. I'm saying that second nature is to watch where the ball goes, right?
I totally disagree. Guys hitting a .140 can't make mistakes like that. And in the first game of the series, when he hits a little pop up to the second baseman and didn't run out of the box and then got thrown out at second because he's not hustling, he's a nice guy. And let's give him the benefit of the doubt. No, it's not the try leak. And you have to know when Marcus Semien's at the plate that the second baseman, Buck and Tabby yell and scream it all the time. Why did somebody stand at second base? Because Marcus Semien now starting to inside out balls to second base, and the second baseman is right behind second base. People that are hitting 140 cannot be making base running mistakes like that. Okay. If you do, you shouldn't be in the big leagues.
All right, so you made your point very clear there.
There you go.
I thought there was part of your first instinct in that is trying to make something happen, et cetera, et cetera. But whatever, I will go along. I will go along with you. I will go along with you on that, as I usually do. Right, so he's hurt. Look, Reese McGuire isn't going to make anybody's all-star team for his hitting. But I got to say this. At least Reese McGuire gives me, this is recently, and I admit it's recency bias, but Kevin, at least Reese McGuire kind of gives me the possibility that something might happen with the bat. I saw that the kid in Double-A, Gabriel Moreno, hit the hotel in, I guess there's a hotel in New Hampshire, over the outfield wall or something. He became the first guy to hit the hotel since, what's his name, Vladdy Jr. So it's a pretty big deal. But he's a ways away. Alejandro Kirk, I don't know what Alejandro Kirk is yet, and I think if anybody tells you they know what he is, they're probably lying. So what do you do here? What do you do with the catching situation? Riley Adams is at AAA. He's on a bit of a roll right now. What do you do with this catching situation, Kevin?
Well, okay, if I'm Danny Jansen and I know he left the game because of that little hamstring thing, I'm duct taping that thing up, because if you let Reese McGuire go out and catch for you and it looks halfway decent, why would you think you have to run Danny Jansen out there hitting a .140? So it's one of those times where you gotta, if you're Danny Jansen, go home and go, hey, I know I'm banged up a little, but I need to step this thing up. It needs to be addressed. We saw the way the Astros catcher did behind the plate, and the way he could get a okay pitcher through an at bat, right? Just by the way he sets up his delivery, what pitch he's calling, it matters. It matters when if you have a Tyler Chatwood in a game who doesn't have confidence and is aiming his cutter, what do you do? Can you have an experienced enough catcher to go, okay, when he's not throwing his best pitch, I like this. This guy can't hit this, but he can throw this for a strike. Let's start throwing this a little bit more, like he was yesterday. Tyler Chatwood, threw his sinker more than his cutter. That's a big deal. So it's just, look, I think Danny's been very good with Ryu, and he's putting the right fingers down, and all the things that go into trying to think along and think seven or eight pitches ahead. He's done a decent job of that. But you have to play both sides of the ball a little. And when you're not, that for me, you have to address that and address it sooner than later. And it's when's the last time you saw a catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays throw a runner out? I understand a lot of that has to do with the pitcher, but not all the time. And it just never happens with a Blue Jays catcher. So, you know, you look for a guy that has a very strong arm, who is, you know, the old saying is you can't teach experience, who has that part of it, and it's just the leader of the team. The catcher that walks out and puts his mask on top of his helmet and says, there's two outs, I'm getting this out. That for me is just a little bit of the element that the Blue Jays miss, and I think they need to address that soon.
All right, let's talk about the pitching. Ross Stripling, you know, we've picked that apart to death. What did you see from Hyunjin Ryu, or didn't see from Hyunjin Ryu, and what did you see or not see from Steven Matz? I'm just going to throw the stat out there. A friend, Daniel Kim, who I like to refer to as the Hyunjin Ryu whisperer, right? He's a Korean-based baseball writer, knows the family well. Throw out this stat on Friday. Coming into this game, coming into Friday's game, Ryu had only given up 3 home runs to the guys hitting 1st to 6th in the batting order. He'd given up 4 to the bottom hitters. Number 9 hitters were hitting 0-33 against him. If you look at that game, he gave up a home run to the number 9 hitter. Friday's game, gave up a home run to Maldonado, which was a slam. And the numbers 7, 8, and 9 hitters were on base 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, including the grand slam. Is that just one of those stats? Small sample size stats where you just kind of roll your eyes. It is interesting, isn't it, that the guy who could dominate or could do very well against guys at the top of the order or middle of the order has difficulty handling facing the bottom of the order sometimes. I just find it odd as well.
Yeah, and there's an interesting stat here, too, of Ryu. The pitches 51 through 75, the opponents are hitting 294 with an OPS of 874. Those are two pretty big numbers, right? Is that command? Is that, you know, he's trying to coast through some bad hitters and he loses concentration on certain kinds of pitches, right? The Maldonado home runs was a changeup right down the middle. He normally doesn't throw pitches right down the middle. That's not his MO, but it's, you know, he is getting a little older. He does come from the National League, which 8-9 hole hitter in the National League is not 8-9 hole hitter in the American League. That's the big difference.
He's been here for 2 years now. I'm sure he knows that.
Sure he has. So it might be one of those stats you just overlook, but I'll know this, that the last couple of starts, now the one in Cleveland, because of the wind and the cold, we'll give him that one. But this last one, it was warm, 78 degrees, whatever it was. Wind wasn't blowing. When he doesn't have command of the fastball in to a right-handed hitter and can throw the cutter off of that pitch in to righties, you see his little get-me-over backdoor breaking ball's not real good. His backdoor cutter's not real good. His changeup that he throws away to right-handers is not real good because they can dive out over it, look for that, and he doesn't throw hard enough to throw it by people. So he has to have those two pitches for him to be really successful and go deep in games. But look, I'll take 2 or 3 Ryus than to take 2 or 3 of other people. Now, Steven Matz yesterday, he said it in a Zoom call. That's the best fastball that I've seen him have all year. It was sinking. He was locating
it. It was really good. Yeah.
It was. He was locating it. He was throwing it with conviction. He wasn't shaken from it. The slider morphed into a cutter, back to a slider. I have no idea what that pitch is. You know, it's 91 for me. It's a BP heater. I don't know why you want a slider to look like that. It's a slider for me is more of a strike 3 pitch. That is that he's got a breaking ball he still strike with. The slider is just that little, he gave up a home run on that little cutter slider thing that he throws 91 right down the middle. That thing for me needs to be more of that 11 to 6 or 11 to 5 where it's going back foot to the righty. That's his strike 3 pitch. But I just think this is who he is. I think he's going to have to think his way through it. I think he's going to give you right around 5 innings. If he can keep that to a somewhat 2 or 3 run outing and give his lineup a chance to score a bunch of runs, he doesn't walk a bunch of people, keep the ball in the yard, stay away from the big inning, right, and maybe have a better routine between starts. That's, for me, is what he's battling. What is he doing? Does he need 2 bullpens? Does he need the long toss? Does he not need 2 bullpens? Does he need no bullpens? Does he need to throw at all? Does he need to lift more weights? It's sort of in between of how do I maintain everything start to start. Like Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray talks about, I go in and I lift as heavy a weight as I possibly can because I'm trying to just get that where I'm going to go every 5 days. This is what I'm doing. Well, I'm going to try and maintain that. And he's found a good routine for that. I just think Steven Matz hasn't found his yet. And I think this is what we're going to see from him. And until he does find his routine, it's going to be that little up and down kind of thing.
Yeah, I keep thinking back to an interview we did with Pete Walker. As a matter of fact, I made a notation of it in the book here. And one of the things Pete said was there is always, for Steven Matz to be successful, there is always going to have to be an element of unpredictability, right? He's going to have to be able to alter his patterns of pitching. And Buck talked a little bit about, I think we need to keep this in mind when we talk about some pitchers. You know, when they don't get pitches or when they don't get strikes given to them, you know, a lot of times there's a purpose that a guy throws a ball where he throws it. And a lot of time you're setting somebody up. And if you don't get that strike, you know, it can have an impact on the next pitch. And that's my concern with Steven Matz going forward, Bark, is he does have good – look, he does have good stuff. I'm with you. I thought the fastball was terrific yesterday. The movement was something we haven't seen out of him. I don't think maybe till – I thought his first start he looked awfully good. Mm-hmm. Sorry, second start he looked awfully good. But the thing with Steven Matz is I don't know how long you can – succeed being unpredictable.
Yeah,
a lot of guys don't have
plan B and C. They have plan A. When plan A doesn't work, what do they do?
Yeah.
Can he throw his curveball more? Can he sink his changeup a little bit better? Can he throw that cutter slider thing that he likes to throw at 91 miles an hour? Can he locate that better? Can he make a pitch-to-pitch adjustment? These are all things. You know, you got to own it. Like Ross Stripling. We sort of pick fun at Ross Stripling, but he owns it. He come out and said, I've stunk. I need to add a windup. I need to throw harder, which is what he's been doing. I need to locate better. I need to elevate better. My misses need to be better. I need to be better against left-handers. I need to keep it in the yard more. You got to own it first. And I just think Steven Matz, when you listen to him talk, he hasn't owned it.
Mr. Barker, as always, it was great to have you alongside me here. It was great of you to do this. It was great of you to tell me that Marcus Semien and Randall Grichuk hate each other. I know you didn't say that. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm trying to create waves here. The Jays have tonight off. They're back tomorrow against the Chicago White Sox. Ray and Carlos Rodon, Manoa, Lance Lynn, Hyunjin Ryu, and Dallas Keuchel. There's going to be some pitching there. That's some pitching. That'll be a fun series. Starts tomorrow. We'll get you set for it on tomorrow's Baseball Center.